Hey everyone, so recently I had an episode where I talk about how my wife and I bought and then renovated a home, and we created a budget template to track costs and hopefully limit our spending and stick to the plan as much as possible. So with that, I put out a budget template that you can go and get, and that was our most downloaded freebie from the Career Yak show thus far. So I'll put a link again in the show notes. Go check that out if you have any type of projects, or you're renovating a house, or you're doing even a smaller project and you have to see what it's going to cost and track costs throughout so that hopefully you don't overspend. Go check that out. Super helpful. Just wanted to remind everyone of that. And thanks for listening. Enjoy the show.
Everybody's got something they're passionate about. And for some of those, it's something that they can turn into a career. And some of those, it's you can turn it into a hobby. But that's kind of what makes life, you know, for lack of a better term, worth living, is to be able to do the things that you enjoy and to be around the people you want to be around.
Hello and welcome to the Career Yak Podcast, a show where we seek to discover what jobs and industries are out there today and learn valuable career lessons along the way. I'm your host, Chris Goodwillie, and since college, I've worked in outside B2B sales. I've gotten the opportunity to meet many different business professionals and entrepreneurs from many different industries, and through that time, I've loved learning their stories, and part of the reason I started this podcast was to share those type of stories with you, the listener. On today's podcast, we have Michael Draper. He is the Director of Development at the Tennessee Kidney Foundation, and what's interesting about my talk with him is Michael has spent the majority of his career in nonprofits, and I don't know that much about nonprofits. I've never worked at one. Well, I take that back. I worked at the YMCA for summer jobs when I was in college. But besides that, I've never really been super involved with a nonprofit organization. So it's really interesting to hear him tell how they're structured, how he fundraises, and how that has a lot of parallels and similarities with being in sales and things like that. Obviously, there's parallels between for-profit and nonprofit businesses, but there's definitely differences, and so it's cool to hear him share his thoughts and shed light on that. Michael also has his own podcast. I'll encourage you to listen to. It's fun and a fun listen, and I've actually been a guest on it. It is called Dad's Watching Sports, and I will put a link to that in the show notes. They talk all about sports and fatherhood. Definitely recommend. And so without further ado, here's my conversation with Michael Draper. Today we have Michael Draper. He is the Director of Development at the Tennessee Kidney Foundation. And Michael, thanks for coming on the show. You also have your own podcast called Dad's Watching Sports. And it was my pleasure. That's the first podcast I've ever been a guest on. So appreciate that. It was fun being on as a dad that loves sports himself. Tell us a little bit about your podcast real quick and how you guys have shifted and added some creativity in.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, thanks for having me on. And thanks for being a guest on our podcast a few weeks ago. We really enjoyed having you on. It's called Dad's Watching Sports. If you look at the name, that's exactly what we are. We are three dads who all have kids under the age of five in our household. One of our co-hosts has three, I have two, and then one of our other co-hosts, Matt, has one. So we're all like really in the thick of parenting and parenting infants and young children and just all the joys and headaches and everything that kind of comes with that. But we're also all diehard sports fans. I have been a diehard sports fan really as long as I could remember, growing up a big University of Kentucky fan and then kind of adding on the sports as I grew up. And my two co-hosts both played, we all played sports as well. And so We kind of came up with the idea of, hey, we love sports and we've got all this stuff that connects us in terms of the things that we do with our family and the great stories and sometimes the funny stories and sometimes the frustrating stories, I guess you could say, that come out of being a dad of kids that are so young. And so we said, why not talk about that? Because it seems like it resonates with a lot of people that are our age. And so, we are enjoying doing it. We're, I guess you could say, in our first season of Dads Watching Sports, we're having a really good time with it.
That's awesome. Yeah, you guys are kind of on the same timeline as I am, just, when you started and everything. And yeah, as a dad of two little boys as well, it's funny how, like, I don't know, you just kind of end up living life or trying to live life as you used to. And then the kids just throw a wrench into it and in a good way. And you learn quickly how not to be selfish. That's for sure.
Oh yeah. One of our earliest topics was actually the very first show we ever did was the day after the Super Bowl. And, we talked about the fact that, like, my family, we were at some friend's house and we had to leave during halftime and, drive 30 minutes in our minivan. And instead of watching the halftime show, we watched Frozen in the minivan. And so, we talk about those type of things. We've talked about taking our kids to sporting events and the challenges that presents and how, that's just completely different than it would have been when you didn't have children or even when you were single. And so it's fun. We incorporate stories about our families and our children in every episode. And then obviously we talk sports and we hope all your listeners check us out. You can check us out on Apple Podcasts, Dads Watching Sports. We've got a Facebook page, a Twitter handle, a newly launched YouTube channel as well. And so we'd love to definitely have you guys check us out.
Yeah. No, I'll link to it in the show notes, but well, cool. Well, thanks again for being on. And I'm excited to talk to you, pick your brain about, so you've essentially worked for nonprofits your whole career. And, one of my goals is to create exposure so that people know, what industries are out there, what jobs are out there. And I, full disclosure, am not super familiar with just nonprofits in general, the structure, the model. I used to work for the YMCA as you did, just nice. More in a, I was more of a part-time, started out in high school and then worked it as like a summer job during college. So, definitely wasn't in the, back-end managerial kind of knowledge of it. But I'm excited to talk to you about that. How did you get started on that trajectory and kind of take us through the beginning of that path?
Yeah, absolutely. So to be honest with you, it was solely luck. So as I had mentioned to you offline and before I got into work for the nonprofit, I was working in this industry. I was in sports radio, working for a company that unfortunately does no longer exist, but it's called CRM Sports. And we produced really anywhere up to, I want to say, about 15 radio/podcast shows a week about college athletics, predominantly about the Southeastern Conference, but we also had a few ACC and Big 12 teams as well. And I got started doing that in college, where I attended Mississippi State University, and started doing that. And the person that was the president of that company hired me right out of college. And so I was working for him, and this was in 2007, 2008. And as everyone's well aware, that's about the time that the economy took a downturn, mm-hmm. and we went through a recession. And so, while it was probably the most fun I've ever had at a job, I just knew that it was not going to be something that was probably going to be my ultimate career, unless I was to I did have an opportunity to potentially move across the country to Los Angeles to kind of continue that, and I just didn't feel like it was a great fit. And so I just decided at that point in time I was going to go to grad school, and went to Western Kentucky University to grad school, where I got a degree in sports management. And during that time, I was working for the Western Kentucky University sports marketing department. I was an assistant basketball coach and a substitute teacher at a local high school, and really thought that I wanted to work in college athletics. When I was attending school at Mississippi State, I had had a lot of good opportunity to work pretty closely with the athletic department from a sports broadcasting standpoint, had interviewed all the head coaches, had really just had a really good experience dealing with college athletics, and thought, okay, now that I've got this master's degree in sports management, let me go and work in an athletic department. And as you can imagine, breaking into that that field, and that's a tough field to break into unless you have a lot of good connections. And so, right. Just to be honest, when I finished grad school, the job market was really tough. And so one of the first interviews I got was in Nashville, Tennessee, at a YMCA as a sports director. And here I'm thinking, okay, I just coached basketball for a couple of years. I played sports growing up. I love sports. Let me go and be the youth sports director at this YMCA in Smyrna, Tennessee, right outside of Nashville. And so that was my first exposure to a YMCA. Had never walked in the doors of one before. Didn't really know anything about it. And really for the first year or two, did not really put together that YMCA was a nonprofit. I thought, all I'm here for is, I'm supposed to help people, entice people to come in and get a membership to work out, and then also to participate in our programs. But really the more and more that I got plugged in and really got to know more about the why, I began to understand the mission, and to understand it is a nonprofit, that every dollar that they bring in, through not only fundraising, but through program revenue and through membership revenue, they give back out in some form or fashion, specifically through scholarships. And
gotcha.
So that was my first introduction to the nonprofit world.
So real quick, before we move on, just for the listeners out there, just to simplify it. So essentially the structure of the nonprofit, obviously it's not that they're not generating revenue or that they're fully funded by fundraising. It's that somehow it's financially that money goes back out in other various programs and scholarships, things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And so just for an example, at the YMCA, I've worked at, I guess, four now in my professional career. At those YMCAs, yes, we would bring in revenue from memberships. We would bring in revenue from program participation. We would bring in grant money, fundraising dollars. And some of that would be used to pay the overhead, staffing costs, the facilities, things of that nature. But whatever was, quote, kind of left over at the end of the day was put into programs, was put into scholarships, was put into community outreach and community involvement. There's a lot of YMCAs out there across the country that actually budget a net zero. To say, hey, we are spending everything that we bring in, we're spending. And some do that and some don't, and for good reason. I've been a part of both, actually. And so I think, it's just a good way for those organizations to be able to say, here's the work that we do, here's how we pay for it, and we thank you for, essentially hoisting us up to be able to do these things.
Gotcha. So, like you said, so some of them actually budget essentially a $0 base budget, where it's everything's a wash, revenues and expenses at the end of the day.
Yeah, I guess I should clarify that a little bit. Obviously, that's also probably, I think, in the Y that I worked at where that was the case, we were putting part of the expenses, quote, expenses, we're putting some money in reserve as kind of a rainy day fund. Or
Right. You're allocating it somewhere.
Exactly. One of the biggest things for the YMCA is you have to, you have a large expense in your facility and in your equipment, to keep up. And
right, yeah, always, I'm sure there's quite a bit of overhead.
Yeah, so you're always putting away some money in terms of that for instances like now, where most gyms across the country are shut down.
Right.
YMCA is not excused from that.
Right, and I'm sure, right, there's maintenance, building repairs, things like that. So
yeah, absolutely.
So awesome. So so continue on. So how long were you with the Y in total? I know you worked at a few different locations, right?
I did. Yeah. So I was with the YMCA total about 8 years. Wow. So I started, like I said, in Nashville, Tennessee, spent 3 years there, met my wife, not at the Y, but while I was in Nashville, and we got married, and then just decided to take an adventure to the Pacific Northwest, and was out in Everett, Washington, which is just above Seattle, for about a year and a half. And then we were in Fort Worth, Texas, at the Fort Worth, Texas YMCA was at served two different Ys there. One as an assistant director and one as the executive director. I was there a total of about 3 years.
So did you decide to move for promotion opportunities?
Yes. Yeah. Especially in Nashville at that point in time, the Nashville Y was not really downsizing, but they were just reallocating resources. And so the opportunity was shrinking for people to continue to move up, and I'd really kind of tapped out where I was going to be able to go in that market. And so, my wife and I just said, hey, let's just throw a dart on the map and see where we wind up. And so we ended up in Everett, Washington. And then, like I said, when we went to Texas, that was for a promotion, and I was in Fort Worth for a year before they gave me my own branch or my own facility as an executive director. And so it's, I have nothing bad to say about the YMCA. It's a great organization. Its mission really kind of stands out as the Y is there for the community and whatever that community looks like. The communities around the country are so different, and the Y is a great example of an organization that adapts to their community and says, hey, you know, whether it's providing meals for kids, providing youth sports programs, providing free swim lessons to underprivileged children, providing access for families, the Y does all those things. And a lot of people don't know that. While I'm no longer working for the Y, I am a board member here back in Nashville. When we moved to Nashville last year, I joined the Y board just to stay plugged in because it's a mission that I feel so passionately about.
Oh, really? Okay, cool. That's awesome. And so you have since moved on. You're now the director of development at the Tennessee Kidney Foundation. You've been there, what, about 2 years now almost? And so describe your role there and how you landed at that role and that location.
Sure. So I knew when my wife and I were looking to move back to Nashville for several different reasons. She's from this area, and we had all of our family lives here, and we were looking to move back. And I thought, you know, this is a really good opportunity for me to just try something different. You know, as I mentioned, my entire career had been with the YMCA, but I knew I wanted to stay in nonprofit. And a couple of things are reasons why. Just being involved in an organization that has a greater mission than just the end goal or what the end of the books say at the end of the year is just something I'm very passionate about. I think it's you have to find the missions that you're passionate about. For me, the YMCA was great because we did so many different things, and in my current role, I'd had a kidney connection through my grandfather. And it was just, it was just kind of a perfect setting. So I knew I wanted to work in nonprofit. I wanted to continue that. And one of the aspects of my job with the Y that I really began to enjoy, towards the latter part of my career with YMCA was fundraising. That was the expectation for really any director or manager level, employee of the Y, because again, it's a nonprofit. So they're going to ask you to fundraise at some point in time. And as my career progressed in Y, the responsibility for that became greater and greater. And again, my last job as an executive director, it was solely my responsibility along with my staff team. And it just became something that I was incredibly passionate about. I enjoy telling people with resources, hey, this is how your dollars can make an impact. And these are the people that you can help and the people that you can serve. And these are the good things that you can feel about yourself because of you're making this kind of impact. So when I began looking for jobs, I said, okay, I want to stay a nonprofit, and I'm not to brag on myself, but I'm a pretty good fundraiser, and this is something that I'm extremely passionate about. And so I just began looking for nonprofit fundraising jobs in Nashville. And if anyone out there is familiar with Nashville and the nonprofit market, there are thousands of nonprofits in Nashville. It's really one of the national hubs for nonprofits.
Really? And why is that?
You know, that's a good question. I don't know that I know the answer to that, other than just there's a lot of connectivity in Nashville. It is one of the fastest growing cities in America, and it's just got a lot of innovative people that love to do good. And not to say that that's not the case around the country, because as we've clearly seen in the past couple of months, there's a lot of people that are willing to do good out there. But yeah, it's for whatever reason, it's just inundated with nonprofits. And so I had a lot of things to choose from, and had
Wow, that's cool.
several conversations with executive directors and CEOs about development positions. And really, when it kind of came down to it, the one that presented an offer and the one that I felt strongly about was the Tennessee Kidney Foundation. And like I said, been there almost 2 years. And really within that role, my job is pretty simple. I'm responsible for the revenue that we bring in. We predominantly fundraise through special events, which, as you can imagine, during our current climate, is going to be a little challenging, considering right. We can't get that many people together. But predominantly, we bring in a majority of our income through special events. But then we also fundraise throughout the year through different campaigns and through different methods as well. And we also receive quite a bit of grant money as well because of the services we provide. And so,
the special events, is that like ticket sales?
It is yes, a little bit. So we have three main special events of the year. One is a kind of a black tie gala event, where ticket sales is a big portion of that. But the overhead, or what really covers the overhead, is sponsorships, because okay. That's really the expense on the sponsorship is not very much at all, and they're usually the highest value in terms of what people are paying. And so sponsorships are really, really big with that event. We also have a golf tournament in the summer that we host. Again, sponsors, whether it's hole sponsors or pin sponsors, or really we almost just kind of create sponsors just so we can continue to add them.
So essentially, they pay to be a sponsor and they get their name out there. And
exactly.
People see their banner or whatever.
Yeah. And they're businesses that are associated with either the kidney world or the medical field or healthcare business, or a lot of, actually for our golf tournament, a lot of the sponsors are construction companies who build dialysis clinics. And they are partnered with some of our more bigger corporate sponsors. And so they, it's just a kind of a thank you for your business type of thing. They sponsor our golf tournament. So, and then we have a walk in the late fall, which is much more of just, it's a patient oriented event. You know, we'll probably have 500 to 600 individuals out at that event. And it's much just more of kind of a day in the park type of thing, where the others are much more structured type of events.
Gotcha. No, that's neat. Like I said, the nonprofit world is so foreign to me. And so it's cool to see the parallels and the differences. How would you compare and contrast, what are the similarities and the differences between like what you would do as a fundraiser and me as a salesperson going out selling products and services versus you fundraising to get cash in for your company?
Yeah, that's a great question. And to be honest, there's probably not a whole lot of difference. I think really the big thing that I've learned over the course of my career, and just through talking with a lot of people and trying to learn as much as I can about fundraising, is people give money to things that they're passionate about. I mean, plain and simple. You know, right now, you know, with everything that we're going through with the coronavirus, and here in Nashville, literally 2 weeks before all this started coming on, we had a tornado that really damaged a good portion of North Nashville and then east right. of Nashville. And, you know, people came out of the woodwork to volunteer and to donate to both of those efforts. And so people are going to donate money again to the things that they're passionate about. And so right. what my job entails is finding the prospects or the people that we feel like could be, you know, beneficial to hearing our story, that have, you know, to be honest, that have an amount of wealth, and connecting them to us in certain ways, finding out, you know, are they connected to kidney disease because they work in the field? Are they connected because they know someone that has received a transplant or that someone that's going through dialysis? And then telling them, say, hey, you know, I know this is a connection you have. Here's the things that we do to combat that or to help individuals that are going through it. But we can't continue to do those things unless we raise the dollars to be able to do it. And so.
So are you approaching individuals and businesses?
Yes. So businesses is a little bit, is probably more from a corporate sponsorship level for the okay. most part. Now, we do have a couple of businesses that just support us in terms of they give not only for sponsorships, but then they just also give annual gifts. But a majority of our individual donor, if you will, are just individuals. And we have a couple of different what we call fundraising campaigns that we run throughout the year. One of them's just on one day, and then there's a couple of other that are a certain amount of days or weeks. But we target individuals that have either given to us before, or one of the things that we do is we have a board of directors, and we also have a core group of volunteers that you know, volunteer their services, whether it be their time or other things with us. And we count on those people to provide us contacts as well and say, okay, you know, in any given board meeting, I will probably say, okay, can you, by our next board meeting, can you bring me two names of people that we could at least reach out to see, can we start having some conversations? Because in fundraising, you're not going to call someone up and the first conversation be, hey, would you like to donate to the Tennessee Kidney Foundation, especially right. if they've never given before. It's going to be, hey, look, can we meet for coffee sometime so I can tell you about the things that we're doing? Or, hey, I heard that you're, you know, you're passionate about, you know, young kids with kidney issues. Have you heard about one of our partners that runs this camp that we also participate in? And so it's all about finding the passion and connecting that to the things that we do. And so it's very similar to sales in the fact that you're telling them, hey, this is kind of the need that you have to feel connected to this. And I'm going to sell you that, I guess you could say from a certain point of view, why you need to contribute to this cause. So it's very similar, but it's my job is all mission driven. It's all about how are we impacting the lives of those battling chronic kidney disease.
Gotcha. No, that's so interesting. Yeah. Like you said, a lot of similarities. So essentially from a process standpoint, you're still gathering, you know, contact lists, prospects, leads, whatever you want to call them, reaching out, cold calling, following up, you know, getting, turning them into warm leads, and then, you know, building that relationship to a point where they end up being a donor, essentially.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's just depending on, and this is probably the exact same for sales, depending on the their capacity to give and the ask that you're going to make. If, you know, the higher the level, probably the more stewardship and the more, you know, coffee meetings and things like that you're going to set up. And that's not to discredit anybody that gives, you know, $5, $10, $15, $20. I mean, that continues to help. And we properly thank each and every one of them. But yeah, that's, it's definitely a, it's a fun experience. I mean, I enjoy getting prospect names and then figuring out, okay, how do we connect this person to our mission? What is it about them that makes them interested in us? And how can we get them plugged in to where they feel like, hey, this is an organization that I want to support.
Right, right. No, and that makes sense too. I mean, if you're selling a complex $200,000 deal versus, yeah, like you said, a transactional buy a $50, you know, commodity item, it's going to be a little bit of a different conversation. So
absolutely.
No, cool. That's definitely fascinating stuff. And I'm sure there's so much me as a salesperson can learn from, you know, how you approach it as well. And obviously parallels, but why would a company, if they're getting, I know you've mentioned the mission-driven portion of it. Now, there are, you know, more mission-driven as far as from a marketing positioning standpoint, for-profit companies. Mm-hmm. Now, why would a company choose to be a nonprofit, and what are the benefits to that?
You know, I mean, well, in terms of benefits, I mean, I think the underlying, or the, I guess the obvious benefit is nonprofits are tax exempt. And so that's a big thing for sure. You know, and that's
right.
Anytime we fill out, whether it be grant information or sponsorship information, we have to provide our, what's called a 501c3 documentation that says that we are a certified nonprofit organization. You know, and so I think that's probably the predominant, I think, you know, when you are asking for funds in order to provide services for individuals, you have to be very careful about how you're promoting that and how you are, you know, as just within the organization, you have to make sure that if you're specifically saying we're raising money to do this, you have to make sure that it goes to that. And so I think that is one thing that probably keeps a lot of businesses maybe from making that for-profit to a nonprofit transition. It's just because of you have to be very transparent. You know, we have to release our 990s every year in order to just be very transparent about who we are, what we're doing, what we're bringing in, what we're giving out. We have to do all that with grants as well. Anytime we apply for grants, there's a budget process that has to go into it. And then there's often at least 1 to 2 mid-year or year-end check-ins to say, okay, what did you do with this? Did you do what you said you were going to do? So I think that's probably the main reason, you know, people kind of differentiate one or the other. But, you know, all that to say, there are a lot of good for-profit organizations out there that do a lot of good. There's no doubt about that. It's not to say that nonprofits are the only people in the world that are doing changing type work and mission type work, for sure.
Gotcha. No, I think that's a good overview. So now, I'm curious, have you ever experienced any possible obstacles working for a nonprofit where, when it comes to growth or salary negotiation or, you know, monetary things or, you know, how much can we invest in a certain project, things like that, that, you know, you're conflicted because, yeah, we could give this money here or we could pay a quality candidate more to have them come on board, things like that?
Sure. Oh, yeah. That's in any nonprofit, no matter what the size is at the end of the day, you have to be, because of the fact that in any nonprofit, you're raising those dollars somehow. Again, whether it's asking an individual, a corporation, providing a service like at the YMCA, but you're getting those dollars in somehow, and you have to be good stewards of those dollars. And so, you know, I can definitely remember numerous occasions, especially with the YMCA and even in my job here with the Tennessee Kennedy Foundation now, where, you know, you even if your budget size, at one of the Ys I worked at in Texas, our budget size was almost $3 million. But at the end of the day, you know, we have to be good stewards of that $3 million, and we have to make sure that, you know, of everything that we're bringing in, you know, we're providing a quality of service for our members. So we've got quality equipment, we've got clean locker rooms, a clean facility, we've got staff that are knowledgeable about their craft, whether it be a youth sports coach or a group fitness instructor or a camp counselor. And so you have to make sure that you're providing quality as well. But there are definitely, you know, those challenges. At one of the last Ys that I worked at, it was a lower budget YMCA. We were just under $1 million. And, you know, we knew that we had the expectation that we were going to spend a lot of our funds on the community programs. We were partnering with the local school district and the library to do a reading program during the summer. We were partnering with both of those entities as well to do a food program. We were offering breakfast to children in our area. And because of that, I knew that, okay, if we're spending X amount of dollars on those programs, then I know that I can't update the free weight area like all my members want me to, because that's just, for me, that's just not the priority right now. Mm-hmm. And it's the same way with staffing. I think you would probably, if you asked 100 nonprofit employees, are they compensated the way that they probably would be in the for-profit world, 100 of them would tell you, no, we're not. But they would also tell you, but that's not exactly why I do what I do. And again, that's not to say that nonprofits don't pay well, because they do. I think it's just, if you were taking a job description and comparing it maybe to someone at a for-profit organization that's of equal or greater profitability, the pay's probably a little bit less.
Gotcha. Do you think there's ever a danger in like a nonprofit choosing the cheaper route when maybe a little more investment could help them progress better faster?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, when you're in the nonprofit world and you're putting together a budget every year, whether you're the CEO of an organization that's, you know, a $50 million organization, or if you're a executive director of a less than $1 million budget, when you're putting that budget together, you have to prioritize what's the most important thing for this facility and for this community, specifically with the why. And in my role with the Tennessee Kidney Foundation, it would be what's the most important aspects of this budget that are going to impact those in the state of Tennessee that we are serving. So sometimes you have to make those sacrifices, and sometimes it could be something that kind of comes back to bite you in the end. But I think the only thing that you can really do is look at your budget and say, okay, I know what's the state of the community we're in and the individuals that we're serving. And so I am choosing to invest this amount in program, knowing that I might have to back off a little bit in salaries or benefits or something like that. And yeah, I mean, I know from my perspective, you know, in multiple roles, hiring individuals, you know, it just trying to, especially if it was a part-time position that was more of like a full-time job description, but paid and gave the title of a part-time position, it can be tough to get quality candidates. And you just have to hope that you can find someone that is willing to come in and you know, kind of hit the ground running and can be coached and trained and built up, and then hopefully be able to work themselves into maybe that more profitable position, you know, with some additional hours on the market.
No, that's interesting. And obviously, you know, feeding a child in need is more important 100 times out of 100 than, you know, updating your free weight room. But it's interesting how you know, any business, not just a nonprofit, has to look at the big picture. And it's like, you know, is you updating your free weights, getting more memberships, which increases revenue, which allows you to feed more kids, you know? So it's like, you know, that's what I love about businesses. Like, it's just like, it does take strategy and thought and critical thinking. And I'm sure it's, you know, it like I said, any business, you're not always going to be, you know, make the right decision necessarily. And sometimes it's hard to know how it'll all lay out. But now with that being said, I know it's easy to get stuck in the grind of the day to day. How do you balance like a day to day schedule, you know, do your daily tasks with big picture thinking, you know, long-term planning, meetings, things like that?
Yeah. I mean, it's very similar to probably any position. I mean, I think obviously if you have some things that are of utmost importance and that are more timely than others, you're going to get those knocked out first. But, you know, just to kind of give you some examples, you know, we, with my role with the Tennessee Kidney Foundation right now, you know, we're currently shifting our keystone, our capstone fundraising event. It's the biggest fundraising event we do all year. It's scheduled for April 18th, and we're having to shift that to a virtual event, which is not necessarily easily done. Having to do that while also we have a one-day fundraising campaign on May 6th. Then we have our golf tournament in June. And then our year end is also June 30th. So planning for budgets for the next year as well. And so, you know, I think you just have to be able to prioritize things, you know, to understand, okay, what is, from my perspective, in my current role, is what do I need to be putting at the forefront that's going to make the biggest difference for our organization from a revenue standpoint. So that way we aren't having to tell individuals that are part of our programs right now, hey, we can't continue this, or individuals that are reaching out to us, hey, we can't take you on as a client right now because we just don't have the means to do so. For me, it's just all about, yes, what's the next most important thing But just kind of keeping your eye down the line of, okay, what also is coming up? Because it's very cyclical in the fact that I know that I've got three events a year, and I know I've got two or three campaigns within that. But you definitely have the things like anywhere that kind of pop up from time to time. We didn't realize that going into the month of February, we were going to be dealing with a tornado coming through Nashville and trying to help people deal with the aftermath from that. As you can imagine, we serve a very high underserved population. And a lot of those lost power after were, you know, there were a lot of instances where those individuals lost all the food that was in their refrigerators. Wow. And didn't have the money to go out and buy, you know, additional food. And so we were able to help them with that. And then now, you know, transportation, getting to and from dialysis appointments, things like that. And so you just kind of have to take the priority of what's the most important thing right now while keeping a good eye on what's coming down the pipeline.
Right. No, that's great advice. Easier said than done, for sure.
Yes, without a doubt.
It's like you get sucked into your email if you're not careful. But So you and I share a Christian faith, and how have you been able to exemplify Christ and be a light in the workplaces that you've been in?
That's a great question. I'm smiling when you ask that, because I think it's awesome that you bring that as a part of this podcast.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a big part of my life. It's something that we hold up pretty high here in our household and teach our kids about. And I've been very, very blessed in the careers that I've had. You know, specifically working for the YMCA. It's the Young Men's Christian Association, and it's an organization that is welcoming to anyone and everyone from all walks of life and all beliefs and all faiths and all backgrounds. The values of the YMCA are Christian values. Mm-hmm. And in every YMCA that I worked, it was predominantly, you know, Christ focused. There was several of them that I worked in. We had before our staff meeting, we would have a prayer. Having that as a part of your work, it definitely allows you to really kind of keep that mindset and to do that. I do think that, you know, I feel though my kind of Christian calling and me living out my faith is by working in nonprofit and using the talents that God gave me to be able to impact the lives of others. You know, I feel like I mention this all the time to my wife. You know, every time that I feel like, you know, we're making a difference, whether it was with the YMCA of impacting a family or a young person, or now with the Tennessee Kidney Foundation providing a person battling kidney disease, you know, whether it's some transportation or some emergency funds to be able to buy the things that they need, I feel like that is me giving to the least of these. And that's something that's the reason that when we moved back to Tennessee, I said, I want to continue in nonprofit, is because it allows me to get up every single day and think, okay, I'm selling sponsorships to corporations for this golf tournament, but that money is going to help pay for someone's prescriptions that they normally wouldn't be able to afford. Or when I worked for the Y, it was, yes, I'm going to ask this donor for $1,000 check, and that's great, but I'm also doing that so we can go and buy meals this summer to feed kids that normally wouldn't have breakfast or lunch during the summertime. And so it's very easy for me, I guess you could say, in my workplace, just given the nature of what I do, and specifically with fundraising and being able to share those stories, it's very easy for me to kind of live out my faith in that way.
Right. No, and you see the full, you have the perspective of the full cycle and, you know, what is connected and what your ultimate goal is. And
yeah,
obviously, you know, I hope, you know, in my workplace that, you know, I'm used by God to lead people to Christ, and, you know, whether it's me or someone else, or, you know, he uses me to plant a seed, whatever, it's, you know, it's in his hands. But my dad, he owns his own business, but when he didn't, and he used to work for a home builder, you know, he always had this little, I don't know, sticky note in his work car that said, now entering the mission field. And, you know, he used to actually be in full-time Christian missions, but, you know, he transferred that to the business world and said, you know, it doesn't stop here. You know, I don't care if you're a, you know, whatever, professional athlete, actor, nonprofit, for-profit, or maybe you are a missionary in, you know, a foreign country. I read a book one time that said, you know, the CEO in the corner office needs Christ just as much as the beggar on the streets of India. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it's like eternally they both need Christ and there's no way around it. Of course, you know, we're supposed to help people with their physical needs as well. But it's, and I applaud you, you know, you just have Jeremiah 29:11 on your LinkedIn and stuff like that. It's, you know, it's part of our lives. So we shouldn't be ashamed of it in our professional setting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think, very similarly to the story you told about your dad, I think I'd heard one time that the mission field is just right outside your door.
That's good.
I mean, it's, you walk outside your door and that's it. And so whether it's in your community or in your workplace, or amongst your friends or whatever, you know, we're called to do that, in the best way that we can. And so, you know, it's something I hope I can continue to do, because I know it's of utmost importance. And it's, you know, getting back to my podcast, it's something that I hope to continue to teach my children as well, as, you know, we have to love people the way Christ loves us and do the things that we can for them. And then if they ever ask, hey, you know, why are you willing to do this? Or why are you so excited about this? So you say, man, I'm just filled with that love, and I'd love to tell you about it. So.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's gosh, man, being a parent is the most humbling thing I've ever had. I told my wife, I'm like, being married is hard, but being a parent is really hard.
It's
the most just helpless sometimes, but rewarding at the same time. It's you'll never be ready for it. So, you know, people are like, I'm not ready for kids. Well, kiss that dream goodbye.
Yeah. It is extremely rewarding, but it's you know, you're responsible for the livelihood and the growth, mentally, physically, spiritually, everything of a human or humans. And so it's a daunting task.
Yes. Daunting is the word I was thinking.
Yeah. But it's definitely got its rewards sprinkled in along the way as well. So
for sure. So, if you were to talk with someone today, either a young person or someone even in the middle of their careers looking for inspiration, what piece of career advice would you give to them?
Man, that's a great question. You know, I think, I know it sounds extremely cliche and sometimes even downright just not realistic, but I think there's still something to be said about going after the things that you're passionate about, and putting forth that effort, whether it be in a full-time career as you know, in nonprofit world or in podcasting, you know, if that's something you're passionate about and you want to do it, then just go do it and figure out a way to get that done, whether you have to balance that around, you know, another job or whatever have you. And so that would be my take as an advice is, everybody's got something they're passionate about. And for some of those, it's something that they can turn into a career. And some of those, it's, you can turn it into a hobby, but that's kind of what makes life, you know, for lack of a better term, worth living, is to be able to do the things that you enjoy and to be around the people you want to be around. And so I think, you know, our society is so accessible now, or, you know, your dreams are, you know, again, not to be cliche, but, you know, people have the opportunity to do things now that they may not have had the opportunity to do, you know, 20, 30, 40 years ago. And so, just pursue your passions and don't let anybody tell you you can't do it. And, make it happen. Being in the nonprofit world, I've seen so many nonprofit organizations sprout up in the past 5 years based off of something that somebody either had an idea or they're passionate about. I think of, our church was just highlighting a nonprofit. I can't remember the name of the nonprofit, but essentially their CEO was, had been passing underneath a bridge and saw, a group of homeless people underneath the bridge here in Nashville. I think it was the Jefferson Street Bridge, and just felt very compelled to make a difference in their life. And so they started a nonprofit where they host a meal and a church service under the Jefferson Street Bridge in Nashville every week. They've built this into a nonprofit organization that's thriving and that's able to, reach out to these people to provide them a quality meal, but then also, a quality message, about God and Jesus. And so, and it's all because, something that she was passionate about. But that could also be, I think that's equally applicable to the for-profit world as well. I think that's, if it's something that you're, if you're extremely passionate about architecture, or about arts, or, really any for-profit business, just make it happen. And there shouldn't be anything that could really hold you back from doing it if you want to. So that'd be my advice.
No, that's good. And God gives everyone different talents and desires. I think of even the guy in the Bible, Bezalel, and he was the he made the artifacts for the tabernacle. Sometimes people, they're in the Christian community. Sometimes I think it's like, if you're not a pastor or missionary, your job's not as fulfilling or whatever. And it's like, well, God makes people skilled at, this guy was, making artifacts, things mm-hmm. like that. And you just never know how God will use your talents for good and for his kingdom. And, definitely do what it takes and be tough. And maybe your job isn't always rainbows and unicorns, but
no. And for those listening that want to go into the nonprofit world, there are without a doubt there are days that are not rainbows and butterflies. It can be tough sledding for sure.
That's a problem when people think it's easy sailing the whole time.
Yeah, there was kind of a running joke that I had with a lot of my very close friends in one of my last jobs was, in most jobs descriptions at the very end, it'll just say like other duties as assigned, could be things. And there would be times where, I was having to clean out our outdoor pool, or I was having to fix one of our AC units because I just didn't have it in my budget to do that. And so I would always, screen capture it. Or take a picture of what I was doing and put the caption "other duties as assigned." It's not all rainbows and whatever, but if you kind of keep the forefront of, hey, this is the job that I'm meant to be doing, I enjoy doing, and I'm making an impact one way or the other, you can trudge through the tough parts. So.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Well, hey, thanks for being on, Michael. Appreciate it. I think I learned a lot. I had a little crash course on nonprofits, that's for sure. So that's good. I appreciate having Michael on the show and seeing his mission-driven mindset and perspective in his career and how that's helped him and moved him forward. And then also just found it fascinating on learning how nonprofits function and are structured. And for those of you in sales or fundraising for that matter, if you want to check out my sales activity tracking tool that is on my website, careeryak.com, and I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. I know that tool has helped me in my own outside sales efforts in my own job. And don't forget to check out Michael's podcast called Dad's Watching Sports. I'll put a link to that in the show notes as well. Thank you for listening. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. And we will see you next time. Hey everyone, one way you can support the show is by checking out our new affiliate partner, Lone Birch Company, based out of New Hampshire, where I am as well. Their owner and founder, Jarek, actually did an interview with me. His episode may or may not be out, depending on when you're listening to this, but go check them out and use the coupon code CAREER for 10% off. They make wood, handmade wood products for your desk or office setting. So check them out. Super high quality stuff, and it'll help Jarek's business and the show. Thanks.